Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, and fishing needs, go to eastport.info. Now let's get this show started.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin Podcast. I am your host, Sean Lavery, and I'd like to welcome everyone back to the show this evening. So I'm kind of going kind of retro today with today's guest, going the whole way back to the very first guest that I got to interview when I came here and joined Ryan on the Noob Show. Everybody knows Ryan has since moved on, but I figured it's been over 2 years since that day. So I reached out to tonight's guest and asked him to come back on to talk a little bit about pre-spawn into post-spawn, kind of some tactics and maybe some baits that we're going to try out. So I just wanted to bring back Juan Verroot onto the Noob Show. So welcome back, Juan. It's good to have you again, bud.
Thanks, Sean. It's good to be back on the Noob Show. I like the title.
It's been Yeah. We welcome, noobs, but we take the experienced guys too. I've heard that, everybody kind of listens to it for the tips and techniques and stuff. So everybody's welcome here on the Noob Show. Absolutely. Gotcha. Well, like Juan, I know it's been 2 years. So I wanted to give you a chance just to let the folks, for those of the listeners who don't know who you are, let them know who you are and where you're from, a little bit of your background, and then, anything that's new in the last 2 years. I know at that point, the last time we talked to you, you had kind of took a break from your classes and stuff, and much to my dismay, because that was something I was hoping to get in on. So, but I figured we could catch up and see what else has changed in the last 2 years.
Sure. Yeah, Sean. So basically, I grew up in central Pennsylvania. So like my home waters would be the Susquehanna River. It's about an hour or hour and a half from where I live. And Juniata River is a little bit shorter drive for me. And then I've got some smaller smallmouth bass waters close to me. And I've been fishing since I was, 6 years old. and really, I've been really a student of the sport. I've always enjoyed trying to figure it out and problem solve and so forth. And so eventually I kind of worked my way into kayak fishing, and I've taught kayak anglers. I was a certified kayak instructor and also a licensed fishing guide in Pennsylvania for over a decade. And I taught kayak anglers probably for two decades now through my classes that I've designed on river smallmouth bass fishing through different video projects. Everybody kind of knows Jeff Little, if you know river fishing, and he and I did a huge video project back in the day on kayak fishing, basically a four series DVD thing, and a lot of YouTube content, all aimed at teaching anglers. I've also written for magazines, print magazines like Kayak Angler magazine, been published there numerous times, usually about at least once to three times a year. I'll have an article in there. And I've also contributed to books on kayak fishing as well. So I've been contacted by folks writing books and, you know, published books that, you know, for parts of, you know, content, things like that, images. And so I've been lucky enough to be able to do those kind of things too. So my history really is the teaching. And I love to teach anglers. That's really what I enjoy doing. I am a licensed guide, but I never really guided that much. Most of what I did was design fishing classes and taught fishing classes, done seminars all over, you know, from here to out to Salt Lake City. So I've also done a bunch of live seminars as well. So I've got a lot of.
And I've been lucky enough to partake in a few of those seminars. So, and I think the last time we had you on, that was kind of what we covered. One of the things that I saw in your seminars, and that was kind of following winter habits and yeah. You know, finding those wintering holes and stuff. Yeah. So, definitely a lot of tons of good information out there. If the listeners can, at the end of the show, we'll have you shout out your social media and we'll let the folks know where they can find all that great info. We just had Jeff Little on maybe a month, 2 months ago, maybe. And he definitely highlighted some of those videos that you guys put out there and talked about that a bit too. So.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. Like I said, I enjoy it a lot, Sean. And there is a video that I've done on YouTube. I did a seminar years ago for Greentop down in Richmond, Virginia. And I videotaped that two-part seminar, and it's excellent. And so that could be a good kind of thing to listen for at the end of the podcast here, to jump over to that YouTube video, watch both those videos. I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback on it that's really helped people like immediately like have success on the water. And that's really what my classes are about. It's like, what are the things I can teach that are going to provide a base for an angler to work from and use their own style to apply to it as well. So it's not about saying this is exactly how you have to do something. It's giving anglers certain concepts, and they master those concepts and they build on them with their own styles and so forth. And so that's really what my classes were all about. So that's why people like them too, because they can apply their own style to it. So you wanted to talk about pre-spawn, smallmouth, and really to me, like fishing for pre-spawn river smallmouth and post-spawn river smallmouth is very similar in terms of location and where those fish are going to be. And so you do though have to change your tactics. You know, it's you know, the fish change their mood after they spawn. And so you're going to have to use different tactics. But I think that understanding how to locate pre-spawn bass, smallmouth bass and rivers is also going to help anglers understand where those fish are going to be after they spawn, because the big females, and that's really kind of what I focus my efforts on in the spring, is the big females. I mean, it's easy to roll up on a shallow spawning area and pull a bunch of buck bass, you know what I mean, off the beds and so forth. And I know that you and I have talked about this just briefly, but, you know, I'm not a big proponent of fishing for bedded bass. I just don't, honestly, I have more success not doing that. You know, I can understand if you're on a lake or something like that, where you're really trying to fish a tournament and it's allowed and you do it, right? I mean, you do what you need to do with a tournament and you do it. I try not to do that because I honestly feel like I am more successful in pulling big females, fishing other areas that are not the actual spawning beds. Because they're only up there for a very brief time to lay their eggs, and then they're gone. You know what I mean? Once they spawn, they move up, they spawn, they move back. The males stay there all the time, right? But the females are cycling in and out. And so I really want to target those bigger females that are cycling in and out. And I feel like there's a better place to head them off at the pass, really. And so that's what I talk about. You know, when you're looking to locate, and I'll use some examples from past examples and my experience on the river. Plus, I'll use some examples even from just like 2 weeks ago when I was catching, you know, pre-spawn river smallmouth. And I'll send you a picture of one of the, you know, I caught a couple really, really nice fish, but a couple more than that, but a couple nice ones. You know. The picture fish, I had a good picture fish, but I caught a bunch of other ones. But when you're looking for pre-spawn smallmouth bass and post-spawn smallmouth bass, the first thing you want to do as an angler is try to locate what I would call primary or major spawning areas. Okay. So you want to like kind of look at your river and say, you know, where are the areas that are 1 to 3 feet deep that are current protected to some extent, and have that gravel bottom, that substrate that the smallmouth need to spawn. And when you find big areas, and a lot of times when you're on your home river, you're cruising through areas and you see the fish there, right? Like year after year, you kind of know where those like big spawning areas are, and you see the beds, you know, fanned out and stuff like that. Those are the kind of places, if there's a lot of activity there, a lot of times there it's because it's a prime spawning area, right? And that means there's going to be the prime smallmouth there that want to spawn there, right? The bigger smallmouth, the ones that really are going for the best spawning areas, right? It's like, you know, smallmouth, the biggest smallmouth take up the best feeding locations, right? The biggest smallmouth go to the best spawning locations most of the time, right? Unless there's some kind of pressure that moves them to other places. I mean, we can debate those kind of things, but I would say, again, general template, right? General template for success is find those major spawning areas. Once you've done that, what you want to do is look at the water around those major spawning areas in close proximity. I would say within sight, right? So we'll just do something easy. Within sight of that major spawning area, what I'm looking for is deeper areas that have low current. So that are current protected. So some examples of that would be, and I just fished this pattern this past weekend, it worked like a charm. Boulders, submerged boulders in 6 to 8 feet of water. So you got your spawning area in 2 to 3 foot of water, generally. Again, we can debate whether they spawn deeper or not, they do. But generally speaking, you know, and then look off of there, you want to find major current breaks where the fish can be out, the big females can be out of the current, but still close to it so that they can feed. I also call those like their pre-spawn locations, but they're really feeding stations, because that's what the females are doing. When they're going to that pre-spawn mode, which right now we've got a little bit of everything, pre-spawn, spawn, and post-spawn probably in Pennsylvania based on my last trip to the river. And so you want to find those major current breaks. And so you're looking for things that could be above the surface, right? Or it could be things below the surface. My last pattern I fished last weekend were boulders, big boulders below the surface. You can use electronics to find those. And I find electronics in pre-spawn river bass to be useful because of that. Or like what I do is the other thing I did, is I can use my feel for my lures, because I've been doing this long enough. Like I can tell if there's gravel, sand, mud. I mean, literally, you know, whether I'm bouncing off, you know, chunk rock or whether I'm hitting big boulders, like I can kind of tell what's down there a lot of times just by feel of my crankbait or something like that. So you're finding those major current breaks within, I would say, right, just using an easy marker of those big spawning areas. And the other thing it could be is ledges above the surface. So a rock above the surface, right? It's obvious, you can see that. And it creates a big eddy behind it. You know, I'm not really looking at those little pockets a lot of times. You want something big and pretty expansive, because what they'll do is they'll move to the edge of that current like they always do. And they'll sit there just out of the current, and they'll just wait for that food to come by in the spring or wait for the minnows to come into that break or whatever, crawfish to move around. They're in there just eating and eating and eating, getting ready to do the spawn. The other thing that you could find is like bridge pilings. You know, I've been in a lot of situations where bridge pilings are really close to spawning areas, and they're awesome when they're like 5, 6, 7 feet of water, 8 feet of water. That, again, it's deep water, current protected, and there's food around. Submerged, like I said, submerged chunk rock that's piled up. It could be like a little point that's coming off the bank or a little cutout or something like that that's deeper than like a spawning area. And so you really want to look for those current breaks like that, where, you know, most of it's ledges a lot of times, or it could even be a drop. So let's say we've got a sudden depth drop for whatever reason. That's where you need electronics too, right? And there are areas where the current or the river bottom is going like this, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, it's carved out a lot, right? And so it's creating a real depth drop, and those fish can tuck right in there. You think about that as a feeding station, And that's why I fish those boulders, because I like those scenarios where it's submerged and I can find that submerged stuff. Because honestly, those fish are there in the current break and there's an eddy line above them, right? There's water flowing above them. What does that do? It rains food down on them. Minnows come up over the top of that. They hit that, they hit the current line, they come down in and they feed on them. You know, crayfish coming across the top of the water, hit that and drop down into that pocket. So those are like, I love submerged stuff that I can find that's close to spawn areas. I think those areas are overlooked by anglers because they just don't think of the river in that way. You know, they don't think to look below a river. They're looking at surface stuff, right?
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
And so they
I was going to say, I think a lot of the anglers are going to focus on what they can see versus something that they might have to dig a little to find.
That's right. And sometimes whenever I'm looking at the spawning area, I do have electronics, but I know that water is like 8 feet, 9 feet deep at the most. I will literally go with my electronics and zigzag it and try to locate and mark things that I think are going to cause like current breaks. And I found like awesome, like for a reason, like I found this one scenario where there was like a high bluff and all the rock had come down and fell down into the deeper water and created a big pile of rock. And those fish were literally just tucked right in behind that. When you find a place like that, you can't necessarily see that on the surface either if it's really deep. But if you can find something right, like that, man, it is like money. And that's one of the things I do in the river too. The river I was fishing this last weekend, it literally had some mud bank. And I looked visually at the bank to see what the substrate, like what the boulders were like, or what was the mud bank. And a lot of times, like in those mountainous areas in Pennsylvania, I was fishing like a really narrow river that was really steep-sided. And a lot of it was mud. Right. So, but when I came to an area that looked like a good spawning area along the bank where it had some rock, I also looked at the bank to see if there was big boulders or big chunk rock, because I know that that typically extends down into the river a little bit.
Right.
So I'll be able to find that substrate. And again, I'm throwing a crankbait, so I'm feeling that too, right? Okay, I feel that rock. And so I really slow down. So you want to locate those feeding stations, whether they be visually on top, you know, you can see it's a big current break on top, a piece of ledge, whatever, or whether you're looking, using your electronics or using feel to find that stuff below, or visually looking at the bank and deciding there might be some boulders, or there might be some you know, chunk rock that's going to be worth hitting and seeing that's close to those spawning areas. So that's really the key, honestly. Once you can do those things, once you can find those feeding stations, those kind of hold up spots before they move up in there, you are right on pre-spawn spots. You know what I mean? You're in the money. You're in the money. And if you're close to the spawn, man, the big females are going to be there. That's where they're going to be. It's almost like clockwork. And the other thing that happens too, like once they move up and they spawn, they'll drop back to those same locations again. So you have two whacks.
Okay. Out.
Like you can literally, like when I was last weekend, I literally caught, I knew there were a female with eggs, right? And I literally caught one that looked like it spawned a little bit. So I knew I was catching both. So it's a revolving door. And so you really gotcha. Want to find those feeding or those spawning areas, find those feeding locations, those deeper, you know, current protected areas. And then from there, you basically have found something. You make sure you just know where that is and you keep a log of it. So you keep going back to it every year, because I can almost guarantee you those fish are going to be there unless something changes with the river. Those fish are probably going to be there every year at the same time of the year, if the water conditions are the same. Now, really what happens there is once you find those kind of locations, it really becomes a matter of how do you fish them, right? What presentations do you use?
I was going to ask that because I was going to say it sounds like if they're sitting watching stuff come through these drop downs, it's almost something they're going to be looking up versus looking down.
Sometimes they do. And, it, you know, and here's where the you've got to judge the mood of the fish. Right. And one of my basic concepts is this, John. I want to fish as fast as I can and still catch fish. Because I can cover more of those locations. I can make more casts, right? It just ups your odds. So there are some days when you could catch a lot of smallmouth dragging a tube on the bottom, but why would I want to do that if I can throw a crankbait, catch, you know, cover more water, you know what I mean? And maybe attract bigger fish.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So you want to fish as fast as you can on those spots so you hit more spots. And, you know, I'll give a comparison, like my buddy that I was fishing with, you know, once I found a spot, like when I saw that I found spots with boulders or whatever close to spawning areas, I would really slow down on those areas, not slow down with my bait, but really blanket it. Right. And then when you catch one fish, I can almost guarantee if you catch a nice female in a pre-spawn spot like that in one of those feeding stations, there's more in there. I've caught as many as 3 smallmouth over 20 inches off of one bridge pilot, you know, wow. Basically like right in a row. And I have witnesses to prove it too, who were right there. So and one of them was a police officer, so he won't lie. when you find a spot and you catch a fish, don't float past it. You know what I mean? Like when you find those boulders like that, don't do yourself a favor. And fish it, right? So I slow down, I go back up, whether I got to paddle up or whether I'm using my torpedo motor, I'm going back up and I'm going to cover it again, right? Maybe with the same bait. And I caught my biggest smallmouth that day, a 19 and a half incher doing that. I caught a couple good ones and I just knew I could tell there's really big boulders down there because what I saw on the bank plus what I was feeling below, and it was in 6 to 8 feet of water, and that was my pattern, you know, submerged boulders in 6 to 8 feet of water. And I just kept going back, and the third pass I caught that bigger fish. Had I just went through there once or twice, you know what I mean, you really want to just go on, because there's going to be more fish there. You know there's going to be more fish there, so don't give up on the spot. So when you catch one, stay on that spot is what I would say. Stay on that feeding station. And the lures that I use, honestly, you know, I want to fish. One of the things I use a lot pre-spawn is going to be a crankbait. I actually did a video for Wilderness Systems about this. It'll be coming out soon. They should be posting it on their social media. And you still there, Sean?
Yeah, I'm still here. I just made you big so that they can see you.
All right. It's always good to be big, man. It's always good to be big. So here's like, so this is one of the crankbaits I use. I love to use crankbaits and pre-spawn for both pre-spawn and post-spawn smallmouth. It's good for feeders. It's good to elicit, you know, that reaction strike. And it also allows me, like in that 6 feet of water or boulders I was fishing, it allows me to deflect it off of that and really get on bottom. You talked about them looking up. That's not necessarily all, you know, the case. Like I would say that on the day I was fishing those fish, if I wasn't really hitting bottom, I wasn't going to catch anything. If I was 3 feet over the top, I would not catch anything. That was just the mood of the fish. So one of my favorites is a crankbait. And then what I do is, this is my muddy water crankbaits here, real dark on top and a red kind of orangish stripe on the bottom. You see these bills here? In a river, what I want to do when I find that, when I have a favorite crankbait, you know, that I have confidence in, like a color or a type of crankbait, get it in two different configurations. Like this is up to about 4 feet. This will go like 8, maybe 9 feet if I'm really, you know, working hard with it. And really, you want to tie one on each one of your rods. Like you want to have two rods tied, the shallow run on one, the deeper on the other, because some of your structure that you want to fish is going to be shallower. Some of it's going to be deeper. You know what I mean? So some of my boulders were shallow, so I switched this. Some of my boulders were deep, so I switched this, because I really, that day.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, exactly. Cause I was going to say, I, a lot of times in the river around here, I run a square bill, and I was going to say, I can't hit bottom one 6 to 8 feet with a square bill. So
no, that's right. That's right. And another trick you could do if you want to get a little bit more depth, like say I'm fishing, even my deep runner. I really think anglers, I did a whole video about this for Wilderness, two of them. Anglers, when you're getting a good color that you like, and I'm not going to dive into like what's the best color. You know, I have some general rules of thumb. Number one, in muddy water in spring, use dark colors to create a silhouette, but make sure you have some kind of orange or red or something on the bottom, some brighter color, because watch this.
Gives you a flicker.
Predators are programmed to see something that's different. When you, back in the days when we watched Wild Kingdom on TV, right? Why did the lion attack that one injured gazelle? I was looking at that video and I could tell that a gazelle was injured, right? Until the lion's running it down, like, hey, there's something wrong with that leg. You know, they're, predators are trained to see something that's different. And that's like, this is like an attractor, right? So my muddy water baits do this. And anything for green water to clear water, just natural, whatever's in the river, you know what I mean? Like, or if you believe that chartreuse is the way to go or whatever, like you have confidence in it, have at it. But what I'm saying is your tool has to hit bottom in the spring, you know? And so your crankbait has to be able to hit bottom. So if you lose contact with the bottom, say the bottom drops out real quick and you lose contact, you can take your rod tip and dip it in the water, down into the water, and still, you're still okay, and you can get another 2, 3, 4 foot out of it that way, and you can make contact with the bottom. And I didn't make that up. I think I got that when I was a little kid watching Rick Klun crankbait fish in a tournament. That was one of the things that he used to call it, kneel and reel, because he used to kneel on his bass boat to get extra depth when he lost contact. And so I didn't make that up, but that's an old school trick. So when you have that, because Sean, I will tell you that if you weren't making contact that day we were out there, you are not going to catch fish. I mean, you were going to get like the odd off thing, but literally you just weren't going to get them if you were like up off the bottom at all. So I usually start with a crankbait. You can use, jackhammers and stuff like that. But the thing is, again, pre-spawn, a lot of times because of the water conditions and so forth, those fish are going to be feeding close to the bottom. They're not going to be coming up off the bottom that much. Again, sometimes they do, all right? Sometimes, especially when the water's warming up, they're getting super active. But a lot of times they're liking that food easy to get because they're trying to conserve energy. That's the way Mother Nature made them in the pre-spawn. And so you want it to be on the bottom, and so you got to really be hitting bottom with crankbait. So if you're going to use jackhammers, things like that, you want to be making sure you're patient enough to be getting it on the bottom, because if you're running through the middle of the water column or too high up in the water column, you might not get bit. Again, there are days when they'll do it, but I'd say day in and day out, you're better off dragging the bottom with that. So I try to do crankbaits. The other favorite in those locations is actually a spinnerbait. And I like black spinnerbaits in the spring, especially when it's muddy. Again, I use chartreuse when it's clear to green color. I call it green colored water. But like, here's one of my favorites. This is a spinnerbait that's probably close to a half ounce maybe. And it's got Colorado. And it's got, you notice my thing here for muddy water, again, a chartreuse strip in there. Again, just a little bit of something to flash a little bit. And then I'm using a twister tail trailer on it. You can use like a paddle tail. I think that, you know, those components are like most important. This single blade in muddy water, more compact. You notice that's a short arm, more compact than muddy water. And then, like I said, black to give a silhouette and some kind of trailer to create more, you know, lateral line, you know, because the fish are going to use their lateral line more in muddy water. But even in green to clear water, I use this in the spring. And one of the reasons I use it, it's really compact. And here's the thing. When you're fishing those, like, say you're fishing behind a big boulder, it's even on the surface, and you have this this really deep pocket, like 6 or 8 feet pocket, you can take a half-ounce spinnerbait like this or so, or three-quarter-ounce spinnerbait. And instead of just casting it and winding it through that area, what I do with that is I do a lift and drop. I will lift my rod up and pull it up off the bottom and then drop my rod tip all of a sudden through that area, lift again. Like I you just have to like get a feel for the timing, and I let it drop to the bottom, and then I lift again, let it drop to the bottom. Some people call it a yo-yo. I call it a lift and drop. And that is, again, you know, using this tool, I think in the, like the way that gives you the best possibility of success in the spring. And here's why. If I just pull that spinnerbait through that current break, my contact, my time in the area where I believe it fished is a lot lower. Even if I'm slow rolling it through there, my time in that strike zone is a lot less. If I do my pull and drop, that thing's not making a lot of progress forward. It's coming up, down, coming up, down. You see that? It's literally staying in that strike zone and working that strike zone later. It takes a lot of discipline to learn how to do it, but I've caught so many, I got photos of so many fish I've caught doing that lift and drop. It's just it's a money presentation when you know that those fish are like really zeroed in on those feeding stations, and you just want to keep that spinnerbait in there. Can you just throw it out and slow roll it across the bottom or run it through the middle? You can. And if it's going to work, honestly, if I'm getting bites doing that, I'm going to do it because I fish a lot faster, right?
Right.
This is a good tool to have in your presentation kit, because I find that day in and day out in the spring, because of the variability, it gets cold, right? Rain, cold water, the fish are just less likely to like run up on a bait or chase it or whatever. It's good to have that trick in your, you know, that presentation in your bag of tricks. So I call that the lift and drop. The other bait that I was
going to ask you about that too. I know casting angles has a lot to do with that too. So are you generally positioning yourself downriver of those boulders and casting upriver and letting it kind of trying to drop it right in behind that boulder and then yo-yoing it?
I do. So let's say this is the boulder. I'm going to, you know, and I can see it, or it's below the surface, whatever the situation, or that's a bridge piling. I'm going to try to come across that and work it from kind of an upstream angle to a downstream angle. And that's usually, unless I really, like, say I'm positioning my kayak and there's just no way because of the condition or the situation, and I have to throw it downriver to a spot like that, I will. But if I don't have to, I want to position myself kind of downriver off the side of it, and then cast up into it. So I might, if it's a bridge pile, I'm going to cast right up behind it, let my spinnerbait drop, and then just start doing that pull and drop, right? Or if it's my crankbait, I throw it right up against that bridge pile, break a few bills along the way. Or I throw it up above, like, so I can throw it up above the corner and bring it down the corner mm-hmm. so I can get depth right behind it. Kind of be, it's coming out of the current into the softer water, right? So then I'll kind of work that whole eddy, or work that whole area. And if there's a boulder field, I'm just basically going to cast and wind from upstream to downstream mostly. So I like to do that upstream to downstream. There's another concept there. If you think about this, you know, if you bring something up behind a fish, they're more likely, if they're in a negative mood or a neutral mood, you're almost always going to turn that fish off. If it's aggressive, it's not going to care, right? But if I'm throwing the neutral to negative fish and I'm doing that to them all the time, I feel like we have a lot less success rate. And I've seen in clear water that work itself out, right? In clear water, I got a fish that's negative, spooky or whatever. I throw behind it, bring something up, and it goes, right? I find that if I can put it in its face and bring it at it, I'm also in those scenarios when you're coming out of that fast water into the slow water, you're almost making that fish have to make a decision. Do I eat today or not? Right. So it's coming right at their face. So it's not coming up behind. So it's not spooking them, not scaring them, but it's making them make a decision. And they can visually see it then too. Smallmouth are primarily visual feeders. Bass are primarily visual feeders. And so anytime I can let them see it, you know, as it's coming at them fast, then I'm going to do that. So that's my spinner baits. I use spinner baits a lot. And then, you know, suspending baits too are gold in the spring and pre-spawn. Again, that's another bait when they're even less likely to chase, right? That maybe I can throw like a suspending jerk bait, and I'll show you. So this is a big perch one. Are there any perch in any of the rivers that I fish? No, but they just like, for whatever reason, it's just different. They seem to like it. Again, you can go with like contrasting colors and muddy, natural colors and clear. But this is, you know, a Lucky Craft suspending. I think it's like a 78 or whatever they are. I can't even remember anymore. I just buy them. But they suspend. And this is another thing you can hang in that strike zone when they're not as chasey, right? They're not willing to chase things down. And you can hang that in a strike zone. So those are what I would call like more power fishing baits. That okay. When the fish are willing to come up like to middle water column or that bottom third or up to the middle, that fit, you know, fish will chase it. The other hard bait I use in spring is going to be a rattle trap. And that you can yo-yo the rattle traps just like you do the spinner baits. You can run it hard through the middle of the water column if they're willing to come up and hit it. You can also really slow it down and just bump bottom with these too, because they're heavy and they get down real easy, right? You'll get frustrated.
That's actually what I was throwing yesterday and did okay with it. I was throwing a crawl colored one yesterday, but it definitely, and I was trying to feel, I wasn't feeling the bottom a ton, but every once in a while I just doop, I could feel it like bump, bump. So I knew I was generally pretty close to the bottom. So
question, Sean, when you were,
yes,
you felt it hitting the bottom, when was that, when you got strikes, or did you get strikes up in the middle of the water column?
Mostly on the bottom yesterday. Now, I had a few small bass hit it almost as soon as it hit the water. But I caught an 18 and a half and a 14 and a half.
Yeah. And you caught them.
And they were all correct. Yeah. Well, relatively deep. I mean, it maybe 5 feet. So
yeah, that's below like 10, you know, general spawning depth. So they were probably off the beds and probably behind something. So your observations there are really important in spring, right? So to me, what that says is I've got to be on bottom. I've got to be if I want to catch the bigger fish, which is what I talked about earlier, I got to be off the spawning area in some kind of current break that's under the water someplace. You know, and that really, then what I would do from there is say, okay, that's part of my pattern, right? That's part of my location pattern. And then what I want to do is look at my presentations and say, well, I'm catching them on this rattle trap. What if I threw a crankbait? Because remember, a crankbait, Sean, is a little bit slower. And if you can get one that dredges bottom, like you were doing with the rattle trap when you were having success, maybe just a little bit slower is going to work better. Maybe not, right? But maybe it works better. Maybe you end up catching more fish or bigger fish doing that. So as anglers, we have to like put those pieces together. And that's a lot of what I taught in my class. It's like observations are key. And being able to make those kind of observations, are there differences between being a good angler and a great angler? You know, being able to let the fish tell you what you're going to do. You know, another thing that this past spring, just to give you examples of that, you know, my buddy who was fishing with me, definitely, he didn't have as much success as I did. And, you know, he would come over on my, I said, come over on my side of the river, because I thought maybe there was a difference in substrate and I was finding more stuff. And really what was going on, honestly, was that when I came to a spot where I know it met my pattern, 6 to 8 feet, boulders, a really big chunk rock, I was literally like making more casts, right? And I was like just basically trying to like make a cast like every foot of that thing, right? And multiple times. And I would go back up and hit the same thing again, you know, if I kept getting bites. But when I wasn't feeling that stuff or wasn't seeing evidence of that boulders, I was still casting, but I was moving. Just in case there was an odd boulder that I, you know, wouldn't notice would be there. But I was moving fast. And then when I came to another place where I could feel it, feel that substrate again, feel those boulders, feel those big chunk rocks, like basketball size chunk rocks, and they were in 6 to 8 feet of water, I was slowing down again. And not by slowing down, that means like slowing down my bait. I mean, like I was just making more casts and making sure my pack was moving slower and coming back up to it again. So those are the things, like observations that you need to make. You know, it's like, this is, you know, this is the kind of substrate I'm fishing on. This is how fast my lure is making. Then, you know, and I probably would have said, okay, rattle trap's doing pretty good. What if I yo-yoed it? Would I be able to get deeper with it? What if I, again, threw a crankbait, you know, that maybe goes a little bit slower through there and kind of deflects more through there, And maybe that's going to draw more strikes, maybe bigger strikes too.
And that thought had crossed my mind. And I was wondering a couple other things, because where I fish is right by a couple big bridges. And so, and it's like a mile wide right there. So I have bridge pilings, maybe 20 of them. Yeah. And I kind of concentrated on the first three closest to shore. Those happen to be in my stretch, the shallow bridge pilings. So I'm wondering if I would have went a little further and tried some of those other ones, if it would have been more productive, because I didn't find any at the bridge pilings, but I also didn't fish the deeper bridge pilings. I fished mostly the shallow ones. So,
and that's a great thought, and you were thinking the right way, because I've seen scenarios where you want to be on the deeper bridge pilings, not the shallower ones. The fish, for whatever reason, aren't going up into that shallow water, even though that might be closer to their spawning area. They're for whatever reason backing off to those deeper bridge pilings. Usually they'll do that when the water conditions are changing, like water levels are rising. For what they, like I've noticed in pre-spawn, they usually gravitate to that deeper structure, or the water's getting colder, they'll move off that shallow. I've been out teaching a class, one day we're out on bridge pilings and they were the shallow bridge pilings catching tons of smallmouth. The next day, you'd swear there wasn't a bass there, and I really don't think there was. But what happened was we moved to the deeper bridge pilings the next day in like about eight feet of water. And guess what? We found them again, and we found good fish again. So, and if I just fished those same bridge pilings the next day and just thought they were there, we wouldn't have caught anything, because we weren't catching anything. It was like almost panic mode. Like, we're not getting anything, you know, over here, they gotta be right here. They just moved a little bit for whatever reason. What happened was, actually it rained. The water was coming up a little bit. And I think the water got in those shallower bridge pilings got too pushy for them. Like it just, you know, cause they're pre-spawn. They're trying to be like very conservative with their energy. Again, they're not thinking that, but that's the way Mother Nature has wired them. Right. They want to be in the best possible area. And what they ended up doing, because it was getting pushy and there's a lot more billowy current in those shallower ones, they had moved to the ones that really you could see that it was a real good current break for them. The water was a little bit slower in that area too. And so they felt more comfortable in that kind of, in those bridge pilings there. So that's a great example. Yeah. You should back off to the deeper ones. Yeah, definitely. So
you might have to.
And I think that's where you really, in spring, you have to play around with your speed of your lure. You know what I mean? Like a lot of, and what I mean by that is like how fast it's coming at you, right? So you know, maybe I can, like I said, maybe I can throw a spinnerbait out and just reel it in and we're going to catch fish, right? But maybe I got to yo-yo it, because that's the right speed and it's the right action, right? This crazy up and down stuff. When they get really, you know, you find times in pre-spawn or even post-spawn when they get really lethargic, because you get a cold front, you get rain, things get really muddy. You know, I'm going to still try to fish with my hard baits and, you know, the baits I just showed you. But I'm also going to have a repertoire of other baits on hand. And here are my three spring soft plastics for when it gets really tough. So this is a Predator Crawl by Fit Lures. And this right here is pretty awesome. This weight system they have, I highly recommend. Really snag resistant, very versatile. And I use this on a number of my soft plastics. It's made by Fit Lures, and it's basically, you can Texpose rigs plastics with it. It's super snag resistant. Even when I was teaching my classes, hardly anybody lost any baits. And when you got a bunch of noobs out there not losing baits, you know it's a good thing, right? So it's like a sled.
Baby. Is that the flutter head?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I thought the last time you were on, you mentioned them, and I actually bought quite a few of them. And you're right. They really are snag proof or snag resistant, I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely snag resistant. The cool thing about them is like you can use them like this, dragging on bottom. So this is one of my things. Again, depending on your river system, you know, I got a crayfish here. It's kind of blue tint because that's Susquehanna, right? Blue tinted crawfish. But I also have black for muddy water. You know what I mean? I got some green for the Juniata River. When they get really finessy, this is a Chili Willy. So in the spring when it gets really tough, and it's made of a plastic that floats, So this bait will actually do this every single time. It always stands up. And then this little paddle tail just kind of is a tantalizing thing. And you could use like a Ned rig or, you know, a 5-inch worm or 4-inch worm, 3-inch worm, right, to do this. You know, so there are different tools, but the idea is to get something finessey on the bottom that stands up, though, like so they can get it, you know, so that it's kind of visible. Like, I think it's important for anglers to have something that stands up when they're finessing because it stays up off the bottom. And again, if this tail's in that current, you don't have to do anything. I call that passive action. You know, that's really good because I can let it sit there and that bait's doing something for me. Right. So if there's a smallmouth eyeball on that bait, that tail doing that is very tantalizing. And then this is a swim bait, probably one of the most versatile lures for a smallmouth angler, is a really thin paddle tail swim bait. You can see I use the flutter head on this. You know why I do that? Because I can reel it through the middle of the water column. I can slow it down and I can drag it through, you know, basically slow it down so that I'm always touching bottom with it, or mm-hmm. I can drag it on bottom like a tube as well. So I can use this bait in a bunch of different ways at a bunch of different speeds. So it's probably one of the most versatile baits. I should do some videos on this. So those are my more finessey baits, and you can use like Ned rigs and all that stuff. This is just my favorite stuff because I feel like they're a little bit more versatile and they offer a little bit different look to the fish that I found to be, you know, like I explained, I found to be pretty useful and triggers strikes.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
So I might drag that stuff on the bottom when it gets really tough, especially post-spawn. Small is great. You know what I mean? And so if I know I'm on those spots I talked about earlier, those feeding stations, and I know that I'm really dealing with mostly post-spawn fish, I'm definitely going to throw some crankbaits in those areas just to see if I can make something happen. But I'm always going to follow up with some of these baits too. So that's the other thing too. You want to follow up with those baits. And I would say this, you know, like when you're in post-spawn or pre-spawn and you're on what you think is a really good, you know, feeding station, throw a bunch of lures at it. You know, there are times when I do that where I just know in my head that this is like a prime, you know, spawning area. And this is like the only two feeding stations close to that. So there has to be fish there. So I'm just like, they got to be here. And so I'll literally throw the kitchen sink at them. Mostly this stuff, right? I'm not going to like dig up all kinds of crazy stuff, but I'll mostly throw this stuff at them, and I'll throw everything at them until I catch a fish. And then it's game on, because then I know what they're eating.
Right.
So if I have confidence, right, I have fish under me, I'm going to just stay on that spot for a little bit and just throw the kitchen sink at it, see if I can make something happen. Once I do, I just build on it from there. So,
you know, gotcha. I hope that gotcha. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So more finessey stuff on the post spawn. You're just getting those fish cycling through the same spots again. I mean, they do. They just cycle through the same darn spots again. And you're just catching post spawners at that time, you know. And I've had good luck with crankbaits on post spawners because it's a reaction bait. So you can do that. But more often than not, that's when I'm really switching up to the more finessey soft plastics and dragging them on bottom. Because the more lethargic a smallmouth gets, the less active they are, the more likely they are to look down. Also, some general rule of thumbs in the spring, and I go over this in the video that I talked about, is, you know, when you got muddy or cold water, they do have a tendency to look down. So even if you're throwing a crankbait, which I will at those times anyway, I want to make sure I'm contacting bottom. If I got muddy water, if I got pool water, if I got a sudden drop in temperature, even if it stayed, if the river's still clear or whatever, I'm going to, you know, those fish tend to look down. So you want to be making sure you're fishing that first, you know, few inches of the water column off the bottom. Hope that makes sense. And then as the water condition warmer and the fish start to get a little bit more, you know, active, like even pre-spawn, they will come up. You know what I mean? They'll come up off the bottom a little bit for a spinnerbait run through the middle of the water column, or, you know, a rattle trap run through the middle of the water column, you know? So be on the lookout for that. Again, I'm going to fish as fast as I can, you know, and I'll fish as high as I can off the water column and as fast as I can, because that makes me more efficient if I'm able to catch fish, right? Because when I'm not trying to contact bottom, you know, and I'm just running through the middle, that's about the easiest fishing you can get, right? Besides throwing a buzz bait on top, right? You know, and there will be a time in post spawn, just so you guys know, in river smallmouth, right after they recover, you know, just a couple weeks after the spawn, like right after most of the fish are recovering, there's going to be a really great topwater bite. Be ready for that. So when you hit post spawn, always be checking for a topwater bite. Highly recommend it. You know, get your poppers out, you know, and pop it a couple times. Let it sit on top. I've had days like 3 springs ago where we weren't catching anything for like an hour. And I just like, it kind of slipped my mind that could happen. And I was like, oh, I'm going to tie on a popper. And man, did I catch some really good fish over 19 inches that day. It was just like, you would swear there wasn't a darn fish in the river, right? For about an hour, you know? And then I was just like, Juan, you forgot. Like, this is post spawn and they might be recovered now. So they might be wanting to come up on stuff. And I threw that popper. I got a bunch of pictures of that too. That was a good day. My buddy caught
it too. I think I ran into that last year because I started throwing the Rico popper at one point. I started hit a pattern, and it was like right when the sun was going down. If the sun got down behind the horizon, and I'd throw a popper for like the next half hour, it would be just like almost lights out. Like,
and that's
constantly.
It's usually about a week to two weeks out from the spawn when a lot of the, like most of the fish are recovered. You know what I mean? Like they're just recovered. You know, you can still tell that they were spawning. You know what I mean? But they're a lot. They're really active. And for whatever reason, they like to come up. I honestly, like, I have a theory, and I really don't like, I don't put much stock in theory a lot of times. It's just like, you know, remember that happens, Juan, and be ready for it, right? You know, but I have a theory that a lot of hatches happen then. And I think they like big caddis and stuff like that. And I think that might be part of it. Because if you notice, a lot of times when I see that popper bite, I'm also seeing good caddis hatches too. You know,
last year, right about that time, I was having to wear my face buff up over my mouth because I kept eating bugs like crazy. And
that could be like an indicator too. And that's something I have to remind myself of, because that day it totally slipped my mind that those fish could be on top, you know, and that's all they respond to a lot of times. It's weird. Like I threw everything at them and nothing. And then the popper was like, all of a sudden there was fish in the water. Amazing. You know,
so
anyway, that's something to look at in the post spawn too, like once they kind of recover. But I hope this is helpful. I mean, you know, again, in the video that I have out there on pre-spawn fish, I do go into detail on colors, and I go in a lot of detail on a lot of other stuff that I didn't do here, because I don't know how much, you know, real time we have and how long you want to make this thing. but I can always talk forever on fishing. But you know, if any of your listeners have any questions, they can always email me. I have a Facebook page and stuff like that. They can throw a question on there. I love to answer questions from anglers about presentations and things like that. So I'm always willing to share. Like I said in my classes when I was teaching for over a decade, and like I tell people I talk to, I will always share there's no secret I have that I wouldn't tell somebody about how I catch fish. Now, I'm not going to tell you where I fish and where I find big fish, but I will tell you the tactics I use and how I break it down, because that's fun. I love to see anglers be really successful on the water, you know, and learn things that they're going to help them, you know, because, you know, it's a fun sport. You know what I mean? Everybody, you know, should be able to enjoy.
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
But I hope that helps. I mean, that's a little bit about location. And again, that's pretty simple. It's by the numbers. You don't have to make it complicated. And then a little bit about presentations to address those kinds of water that you're going to find the pre-spawn, post-spawn fish. And that's really all it is, you know, and fish a river, find those spots, and they'll usually be the same year after year for 5, 6, 7 years. They might change eventually, but they'll be very similar every single year. And you can go to other rivers and break it down too, you know, and find those areas like that. So.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know I always take for granted on the Susquehanna that I have miles of ledges to fish. And, yeah. But if you're fishing a smaller river, mm-hmm. like some of our other hosts, they're over like in Ohio and yeah. kind of places a little more Midwest where mm-hmm. you might, yeah. you're, those spots are going to be a lot fewer in their river than maybe I have access to here. So, you know, I still have quite a few places to check mm-hmm. if I'm going to be hitting those kind of spots. But in smaller mm-hmm. rivers, like the Duck River or some of those mm-hmm. other rivers that you hear about people fishing, that you're going to have quite a few fewer places to look to look yeah. at these fish.
You know? And in your smaller rivers, it might be drop-offs too. So if you look at a bank and say there's like a shallow kind of spawning area, and then like the river I was fishing, those boulders were actually on a steeper drop. So it could be, cause that is enough, especially if the drop has like some irregularity to it, there's places mm-hmm. for the fish to tuck in there. And so if you're in a river that doesn't have a lot of, you know, boulders or anything like that, look for current depth changes, like really drastic current changes. Either, you know, like I said about that bowl effect, right? So the river's coming down, it drops, the bottom drops out. Look for that kind of stuff close to the spawning areas. And look for maybe there is some, like, you know, the bank comes down and then it's gradual and then all of a sudden it drops like 3 feet off like that. They'll hug that and that'll be their pre-spawn spot too. I've seen that many, many times as well. Because again, we tend to think at an angle like that's a drop, but that drop has this in it too, ripples, right? And so there's a little tuck-in spots there. And if that's the only thing they got to rest in to ambush prey in is pre-spawn fish, that's what they're going to use. So every river is different, you know what I mean? And you really have to look at what kind of cover is available, what kind of structure, especially structure for pre-spawn, what kind of structure is available. And really like in your head, make the tally, like make a list of structure in the river you fish, right? Like when I teach on the Susquehanna, it's like, what's our structure here? Well, you said it, ledges, there's chunk rock, there's boulders, there's islands. There's two different kinds of islands on the Susquehanna. If you really need, you do need to categorize them because they're different. One is what I call minor islands. Those are the ones where there's no trees and it's mostly grass or shrubs, right? The other category for me is major islands. Those are the ones that have trees on them. They're different and they attract fish at different times of year under different conditions. But you have to make the differentiation between those things, right? You know, there's a difference right. between boulders and chunk rock, you know, you know, there's, and so you got to like look at your river and like what I would do as an angler, if I'm fishing rivers, I would make a list of the structure. Wood, on some rivers, that's big. On our rivers, it tends not to be that big most of the time because there's just so much other structure, right? That's more right. appealing to the bass. But on some rivers, wood is the thing, you know? Wood is it, right? A root wad is a bass attractor. You know, it might even, a root wad might even be a pre-spawn spot. You know what I mean? It's you know, in the water and deep enough water near the spawning area, right? So yep. as an angler, what I would say too is make a list of what you perceive as being the structure and what you perceive as being cover on your river. And really try to think about that, you know, because once you know that, you can start, you know, kind of patterning the fish and say, hey, look, they were in the minor islands during the summer. They moved in there really tight when the water levels were going up because I caught a bunch of fish around a bunch of islands, right? There you start to build your patterns that will hold year after year so that when you get to those conditions right away, you can hit the river and you're like, huh, all right, I've seen this before. let's go do this.
Yep.
Right. And that's when you really, you know, can, and even breaking down new rivers. I know years ago I was in a tournament and I never fished this river before in my life. And I looked at Google Maps, and one of the things I said, what is the primary structure? Like in the Susquehanna, if I asked you that question, you'd say, what's the primary structure?
Ledges.
Yep. Ledges, primary structure, day in and day out. That's, if you want to look for fish, go find a ledge, right? And you will find some fish, right? And so I looked at that river, and it was actually gravel bars. And I actually won the tournament, and my partner who fished with me got second place. And we fished the same pattern all day. And we did really well. I knew when I was throwing back a fish, and one of the other tournament guys said, are you throwing that? You know, it wasn't a keep, but I didn't measure it. And they're like, are you throwing that back? I'm like, whatever. I already got one bigger than that. I knew that we would be up there pretty good, and we were like number one and number two.
But it was
a pattern on gravel bars because that was the primary structure, and then I just figured out how the fish were situated on that primary structure, which luckily we figured it out pretty quickly and made it pretty good. So anyway,
nice.
Think about your structure in your rivers if you're a river angler. And think about when your time of year, when you're catching fish around certain structure and how they're relating to it. Think also about certain water conditions and where you catch fish, because it's not an accident. They're there. They're there for a reason. And then that's when you can start duplicating it. You know, keep a log, your water conditions, water flows and stuff like that. And if you do that for 2 or 3 years, you know, pretty religiously, you're going to build a repertoire of patterns that you can just use year after year after year.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on, and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Wow, that was a lot more than you probably want to know, huh, Sean?
But that's perfect. You know, I've heard from listeners that they love it when, you know, we just pack in, you know, all that detail, because it just gives them so much more tools to go out and to try. And like you said, you know, that's not Susquehanna specific or Juniata specific. That those kind of things will work if you can locate whatever is in your body of water. You know, you can put those same things to use. So
I've fished for bass in a lot of states and a lot of different types of water, and really just identifying key structure and then going after it. You know, again, maybe there are these really minute, you know, that a local might know, minute patterns, right, that are really pattern on a pattern, spot on a spot. I mean, I can do that on Susquehanna. There's a spot, and then there's the spot on the spot. You know what I mean? Where it's concentrating fish for some reason under certain conditions, right? But in most places you can go, and I've done that. Just I make an inventory of all the structure and all the cover, and then I say to myself, let's methodically go through some of this stuff, and let's pay attention to where we're catching the fish. And then just keep duplicating that on this river. And I've done it in a lot of rivers I've never even seen before, and been able to catch fish. So,
well, it also, I think, helps you to eliminate water too, because, you know, if you take a look at the Susquehanna, that's a lot of river. And if you're going to just go around and try and locate fish just by, you know, luck, it's going to be a lot tougher versus if you know the spots to start looking and then you can move from there, it's going to help you be more effective anyway, because you're eliminating water that you don't need to try because you have a good idea already where they might be. So,
Yep. Yeah. You got your hunch where they might be, but then you've also got to be ready to give up and give it up and go back to square one and you start making a bunch of casts. And, you know, now
right.
I taught my class, it's like in the beginning, when you're trying to set a pattern, you really want to give on a piece of structure or a type of cover, you want to give the fish a few different looks until you figure out like whether they're really there or not, because you can't just like throw a spinner bait. You know, you can, honestly, you can, but you might miss a good pattern that way. You know what I mean? So sometimes, even though I'm catching fish in the first, like fishing in a tournament is different, right? Than fishing for yourself. When I'm fishing for myself and just for fun, I want to learn something that day. So a lot of times, even though I might, like a lot of anglers, when they catch a fish on the first bait, on the first type of structure, or maybe they're just throwing, right? And they're just catching it on something. They're not even really paying attention to what structure they're fishing on, what depth, what current flow, substrate, all those details you really should be paying attention to. You know, they'll catch fish and then just stick with it, right? But sometimes not changing means you're not going to catch bigger fish. You know what I mean? And so a lot of times, even though I catch fish, I might start to nail down the location by catching some fish, but then I start to fine tune my presentation and change up my presentation on those pieces of structure that I think are, or I know are holding fish, to try to pull bigger fish. You know, that's a big thing. Like, okay, now I'm catching fish on this structure. Can I change my presentation to catch bigger fish in some way? That might mean going bigger, right? Maybe even going smaller some days, right? Or going slower some days, or going faster, right?
Right.
You know, so really it's, you know, I'm going to do a video on this, so I'm not going to give it all away, but there's a presentation I do with jerkbaits that you can fish a soft jerkbait, like a fluke, in one way, but there's a certain way you can fish it where you can draw bigger fish. And I've had this happen in my class numerous times. If you fish it a certain way, like the way most people fish them, you will catch okay fish. But if you change it a little bit and you fish it a little bit differently, you actually draw strikes from bigger fish, and it does work.
Interesting.
It's probably one of my, I'll do a video about it. Like I said, I don't want to give it all away, but I will share it eventually here. But I want to do a really like in-depth video on it, honestly, because I think it's a really powerful technique, and I've used it in my classes. I mean, the head of trout hatcheries, like for the fish commission, took my class. He caught his first 20 inch smallmouth using that technique. And that day we had another guy catch his first 20 inch doing that same technique. So it's a soft jerkbait technique that's definitely different, but it draws big fish. So my point there is, honestly, Sean, is that when you find the fish, don't be happy just catching the fish if they're, you know, not the size you're after. Like, try changing up to see if you can, maybe you need to fish out more aggressively on top to get the bigger fish. You know, again, you just play around with it till you get something.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. So I definitely look forward to hearing about that trick with the flukes and stuff, because I'm definitely interested in catching more 20 inch. I finally caught my first 20 inch smallmouth last year. I think it was 20 and a half. So, and that was probably 3 years of searching for a 20 inch fish. So I'm definitely interested in catching more, but,
There you go. Awesome, man.
Well, tons of good information. I wanted to give you a chance. Where can folks find these videos? What's the best place to look you up, and also your videos and your content?
Sure. Videos on one, the YouTube channel is One More Fish, like One More Fish. So my first name, Juan, and then more, like catch more fish. So
there you go.
I'm looking at starting another guide business, and I think that'll be the name of it. And I'll start teaching classes again. So it should be pretty awesome. I probably will start next year though.
And
then, my Instagram is Juan More Fish again. And, all the videos are on that YouTube channel. So look at that. And then also I have a Facebook page that's, Juan Verroot Fishing. So that's my last name, Juan Verroot Fishing. That's really the main thing: YouTube, Facebook, and then Instagram. If you just want to see some of the stuff, I actually put some tips on the Instagram too. I don't just like putting out pictures. I like to like give a tip here and there and some insight into what I'm doing. So those are the major places. I'm sponsored by, been a long time Wilderness Systems guy. So I do videos for them. So if you want to see some of my videos, you can go over to the Wilderness Systems page too, because some of them I give to them. And then also Yak Attack has been a long. I've been with them since they had the VisiCarbon Pro. Was about their only thing they were selling. Love that company. Love Luther Seifert, man. He is an ingenious designer. I got about everything they make I use. It takes a lot to get me to put gadgets on my kayak because I'm not a big gadget guy. But if I'm going to use something, it's something they designed. And Fit Lures, I've been with them a long time. Those baits were designed by one of the best smallmouth anglers on the Susquehanna, just a super knowledgeable guy who passed away a couple years ago, but had sold the molds and so forth to this new company, Fit Lures. And so they're making the current thing, doing it the same way you're doing it. And, I really enjoy using their baits for smallmouth, and that's their specialty, is designing baits for smallmouth bass fishing. So those are my sponsors. You can see my articles a good place to pick up some of my articles, they're really good articles, would be on the Kayak Angler Magazine, their website. They've taken a lot of the magazine articles that I've published with them in their hard copy magazine, and they've taken them and just scraped them and put them on their website. So if you just search Juan and, in their search box, you'll get like a listing of all the articles that they posted. And I'm really proud of those articles, honestly, because again, when I write an article for them, I write it in a way that if an angler reads it, I want them to have instant success from the tip, instant success from the concept. And that's the way I write it. People to be able to understand it and apply it. So I make it simple and actionable, right? And they can go out and do it themselves right away. I don't get super, super complicated, because fishing is sometimes made more complicated than it needs to be. It ain't that hard. Fish got a brain about that big. So, they got instinct, and you use that instinct against them, you use the behaviors against them. So that would be where you can find stuff for me. Well, that was a lot.
And what's the best way to ask you a question? Like if they had a question, Instagram Messenger?
Yeah, they can send me a message or just put it on the Facebook page. I like when people put questions on my Facebook page, because honestly, I can answer it and everybody can get the benefit of it.
Right. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
And honestly, there's no stupid question. Like one of my rules on my Facebook page is if you think people, if you get bothered by people asking the same question over again on my Facebook page, then you must be an expert. So go find someplace else to be. You're way past anything I have to offer then too. When you're new, you just ask your question. You know what I mean? Like ask it, you know what I mean? I'll answer the same question 100 times if I have to, I don't care. Cause every time I answer a question, I think about it before I answer it. And I learn how to teach it better. I learn how to explain it better. So I don't mind answering the same questions over and over again. It doesn't bother me.
What I learned. There's one question I might shoot you then, because I've been looking at it, and I know there's another guide on the Susquehanna, Chris Gorsuch. Probably know him, because he throws a lot of fit stuff.
Very well. I fished with him. Yeah, I fished with him out of his boat. Yeah. Yep.
And I know he throws the stone caddy, and I need to learn how to fish that. Mm-hmm. I've tried it and haven't had a lot of success, and I know he has a ton of success, so I know it's got to be something I'm doing wrong.
It's a good bait. You can fish it on a ball head jig. You can fish it that way, or you can fish it on that, if it's the right kind of cat. Like Fit Lures makes one that's designed to fit on the flutter heads, and that works mm-hmm. good because of the thickness of the bait and so forth. Because some of the baits like that they make their stone cats, the bodies are so big and thick that it's hard to fish on a flutter head. You almost have to fish it either Texposed rig, which gets a little messy in river fishing, or if you're using like a regular Texposed hook and so forth, because then you got to peg the weight and do all kinds of stuff. That's why I like the flutter head, because it's basically Texposed, but it's all compacted, all one unit. You got nothing to mess around with. But they do make a stone caddy that actually I like it because it's thinner and it moves in the water. A lot of the ones I see out there in the market, they're so thick that the tail doesn't do anything. They're stiff. They're like a stick. So that's why I like their stone caddies. But yeah, you can fish them slow, drag them like a tube, drift them like in the current, like they're tumbling. You can tumble them. That's a good presentation with a little bit of lift once in a while. Like I find with them, the least amount of movement, the better. So I tend to fish them like a tube, basically.
Okay.
And I've had a lot of luck with them too.
So. Cool. All right, man. Well, again, thanks so much for coming on. I'll try and make it not 2 years again before we have you back on, because you have so much good info. And let me know when you start classes again. I'll be paying attention to your pages and stuff, because that's definitely something I'm interested in taking advantage of for sure. So
yeah,
man. And I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for that soft plastic jerkbait article too, or video. So
it's a good one. Trust me, it's a good one. You got to believe in it. It's a little bit out there, but you got to believe in it. As long as you believe in it, you're gonna catch them. You're gonna catch some big ones. It's a lot of fun. And if you know, if your listeners, if you take a poll and you want a certain they tell you a certain topic, I'd be happy to come on and talk about it. You know, like whenever people have a specific topic, like today was great because it's very specific and then kind of think through it and present it. But you know, if your listeners send you notes and they want a certain topic on river smallmouth fishing, I can definitely do that. Or even the fly fishing realm, because I do a lot of fly fishing for smallmouth and for trout, but for smallmouth in particular on the river, I'd be happy to do that stuff too. So whatever you guys got, I'm always happy to teach. Anytime I get a chance to teach a little bit and share some of my 50 plus years of fishing knowledge, I will do that. So.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, you heard it there. If you have a topic that you would like Juan to come on and talk about, drop it in the comments on any of our pages, and we'll definitely reach back out to him and have him back on. So, awesome. All right. Well, in the meantime, everybody, go check out Juan's pages for tons of great information. Him and Jeff, like I said, they have that awesome series that it's like basically the Bible of river smallmouth fishing. If you want to go check that out, there that is pretty much the best information you could really find. And it's all out there readily available. But definitely, check out his new pages, the One More Fish. Definitely give him some hits. And I'll make sure I post links to those in the show notes. So if you want to make it easy, you can just go down there and click. But Juan, again, thanks, Bud, for coming on. Definitely tons of great information. Guys, thanks for tuning in. And this has been the Bass Fishing for Noobs segment on the Paddle and Fin podcast, where we bring you the techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. Thanks, Juan, and have a good night, everyone.
Awesome, man. Thanks, buddy.
Yep. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures, your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude.
Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.